Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Credit Access Grameen Limited Q4 FY25 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Renish from ICICI Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Sagar. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Credit Access Grameen's Q4 FY25 earnings call. On behalf of ICICI Securities, I would like to thank Credit Access Grameen's management team for giving us the opportunity to host this call. Today, we have with us the entire top management team of Credit Access Grameen, represented by Mr. Uday Kumar Haber, Managing Director, Mr. Ganesh Narayan, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Nilesh Dalvi, Chief Finance Officer, and Mr. Saib Sharma, DGM Investor Relations. I would like to hand over call to Mr. Uday Kumar for his opening remarks, and then we'll open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Renish. Good evening to all. We are pleased to welcome you to the conference call to discuss our fourth quarter and FY25 business performance. This year has been transformative for the microfinance industry, defined by the stimulus unfolding of diverse internal and external challenges. The microfinance industry has been tested by a complex set of challenges, including extreme heat waves, operational limitations due to prolonged elections, growing customer over-leveraging, ring-led issues, tighter underwriting resulting in multiple MFIN guardrails, and temporary disruption stemming from the Karnataka ordinance targeting unregulated lending practices. The rising delinquency trend in the microfinance industry, which began in April 24, peaked in November 24, subsequently reversing till March 25. We are already witnessing new par accretion rate largely getting normalized across all states, excluding Karnataka. Whereas we expect the new par accretion rate in Karnataka to normalize by end of Q1 FY26. Through every challenge, CA Grameen has emerged stronger, proving the resilience and sustainability of the model that we have created. We witnessed a declining new par accretion rate across all states while elevated delinquencies in Karnataka during Q4 FY25. In all states, the turnover story has been continuing since November 2nd half, driven by reduced leveraging, improved ground level situation, high customer connectivity, expansion of our employee base enabling more frequent and disciplined follow-up. Combined with targeted support from our business support team, this strategy delivers stronger recovery outcomes across delinquent accounts. We observed encouraging traction of collections from PAR buckets, with 40% of our customers in PAR 1 to 60 and 10% of borrowers in PAR 60 plus making partial payments. As guided, we strengthened our employee strength from 19,333 in December 24 to 20,970 by end of March 25. Importantly, we maintained a firm grip on employee retention, achieving an annualized attrition rate of 30.5% in Q4 FY25, amid high churn across industry. The revised FY25 growth guidance of 7-8% issued in January 25 was impacted by incremental stress emerging from Karnataka. This stress became visible from the last week of January 2025 because of operational ambiguities in anticipation of the ordinance, on-ground hostile environment, media and political sensitivities, and collection being limited to central meetings. It is important to highlight the role of MFIN in serving as a unified voice of the microfinance sector in such a situation. They proactively engaged with the Government of Karnataka, the RBI, and the stakeholders, demonstrating the sector's commitment to strong governance, customer protection, and regulatory compliance. Their leadership ensured that the ordinance focused on addressing unregulated entities with minimal impact on the legitimate operations of regulated institutions. Despite these challenges, majority of borrowers continue to repay, reflecting underlying customer resilience. However, disbursement momentum was affected as we prioritized our focus on portfolio stability over guided growth, with disbursement rate dropping to 57% in February and 65% in March, as a proportion to the normal rate. While these factors altered the Q4 FY25 growth plans, They were necessary to navigate the evolving environment and to protect our portfolio quality. As a result, our growth, credit cost and profitability parameters are not in line with the revised guidance. We added 2.61 lakh borrowers in Q4 FY25, of which 43% were new to credit, resulting in FY25 new borrower addition count at 7.49 lakhs. The new to credit percentage trend has increased from 30 to 35% to 40 to 43% level over the past couple of quarters, demonstrating the underlying potential of the microfinance business across the country. As a result, our unique borrower count has increased from 26.3% in August 24 to 31.1% at the end of March 25. We opened 100 branches during the year across well-established markets and newer geographies. Our evolve with customer strategy is helping deepen our customer engagement, with retail finance reaching 1,543 crore, contributing 5.9% of the AUM compared to 2.7% a year ago. MFIN guardrails, coupled with our internal policies, including three-lender cap implemented in Karnataka from February 25 itself, we have achieved significant deleveraging over the past 7 months. The GLP of borrowers with more than three lenders declined from 25.3% in August 24 to 14.7% in March 25. And the GLP of borrowers with over 2 lakh unsecured indebtedness declined from 19.1% in August 24 to 10.8% in March 25. Further, the average total unsecured debt of CA Grameen borrowers has declined 14% YOY, while average monthly obligations have declined by 10% YOY. Now, I'm referring to a slide 12. It is important to see PAR 15, both at the company level and excluding Karnataka. In case of borrowers with four lenders, PAR 15 excluding Karnataka remained same at 11.7% QOQ. Similarly, PAR 15 in case of borrowers with more than four lenders excluding Karnataka stood 27% in Q4 FY25 versus 26.1% in Q3 FY25. Out of the overall PAR 15 of 6.6%, 41% of the account of borrowers with more than three lenders. Our accelerated write-offs initiated in Q3 FY25 alongside a prudent provisioning strategy have advanced the cleanup of stressed exposure within the book. We have taken Rs 479 crores accelerated write-off in FY25 of non-paying loan accounts with 180 plus DPD, resulting in additional credit cost of 151 crores. The total write-off of FY25 stood at 1,124 crores. Overall, the company continued to hold 179 bps, about 456 crore higher provision over PAR 90, 370 bps or 915 crores higher provision compared to IRAC prudential norms, and Rs. 98 crores higher provision compared to NBFC provisioning norms. The credit cost stood at 583 crores on Q4 FY25 and 1,929 crores or 7.7% for FY25. The deviation in the credit cost compared to the revised guidance was primarily due to the Karnataka issue. Our collection efficiency excluding areas stood at 91.9% for Q4 FY25, while being 92.4% for the month of March 25. PAR 90 plus stood at 3.28%, GNPA of 4.76% and NNPA at 1.73%, both predominantly measured at 60 plus DPD. The net interest income grew 1.7% QOQ to Rs. 876 crores with portfolio yield at 20.4% and interest spread of 10.3%. Our average cost of borrowing has remained stable at 9.8% for the last 7 quarters. In Q4 FY25, we raised Rs. 3,144 crore, including USD 50 million through ECB route from International Finance Corporation. The share of foreign borrowing stood at 21% at the end of FY25, firmly moving towards FY28 medium-term strategy of sourcing 25 to 30% of fund from foreign source. NIM remained healthy at 12.7% for Q4 FY25, while 12.9% for FY25, in line with our revised guidance. Cost-to-income ratio was at 31.9%, while PPOP stood at rupees 634 in Q4 FY25, 2638 crores in FY25. Our accelerated write-off approach has certainly impacted Q4 FY25 profit, which stood at rupees 47 crores, though it will help safeguard our profitability going ahead. The liquidity levels, including cash and cash equivalents, remain adequate at 2,336 crore, amounting to 8.4% of total assets. Additionally, we have sanction in hand of rupees 3,687 crore and another 4,667 crore worth sanctions in pipeline. The capital adequacy remained comfortable at 25.5%. Amid multiple headwinds faced in FY25, we delivered ROE of 1.9% and ROE of 7.7%. Our cross-cycle performance of ROA of 3.6% and ROE of 14.4% over past 8 years is a testament to disciplined execution and consistent value creation. We are well poised for FY26 on the back of stabilizing asset quality and improving business momentum. As we look ahead in FY26, we must carefully balance both asset quality normalization as well as business growth. With a more balanced competitive intensity in the industry supported by MFIN guardrails, we see good opportunity to leverage our strong balance sheet and capital position to drive business growth. Our retail finance division will prove to be strong growth accelerator going forward. However, we also need to be cognizant of various industry challenges in the form of higher steady state delinquencies, managing the productivity of loan officers, reduced credit supply for microfinance customers, and temporary impact of any potential state government regulation in lines of Karnataka. Considering the evolving business environment, we are aiming for AUM growth of 14-18%, of which MFI growth will be 8-12%, and balance will come from retail finance. NIM of 12.6-12.8%, credit cost of 5.5-6%, ROE of 2.9-3.4%, and ROE of 9.8-13.3% in FY26. Before I hand over the forum for the Q&A session, I would like to inform you all that I shall be retiring from my role of Managing Director on 25th June 2025. With effect on 26th June 2025, I shall be appointed as Non-Executive Nominee Director, subject to necessary approval from applicable authorities and shareholders. I shall also be appointed to the Managing Board of Credit Access India BV, the Holdco, to support the group. Further, our CEO, Mr. Ganesh Narayanan, shall be appointed as Managing Director and CEO for a period of 5 years with effect from June 26, 2025, subject to necessary approval from the Reserve Bank of India as well as shareholders of the company. We look forward to your continued support as we take our company into the next higher orbits of the growth. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star then one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star then two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Again, to register for a question, please press star then one. Our first question comes from the line of Rajiv Mehta from Yes Securities. Please go ahead.
Sir, hi, good evening. Just a couple of things. Sir, when I look at the ECL coverage, I think they seem to have come down across stage 1, 2 and 3 assets in this quarter versus previous quarter. So if you can just throw some light about, has there been any revision in the ECL model, and then what levels of ECL coverage has been carried forward in the guidance of credit costs that we have given. Second is on when I look at, even excluding Karnataka, when I look at the other geographies and when I look at their, PAR accretion, monthly PAR 15 accretion rates, they are still 20-30 bips above, say exactly 1 year back in March and April. So when we give out a guidance of a certain credit cost, while you've broken up the guidance of credit cost, are we factoring that this 20-30 bips of slightly above normal accretion trend to further normalize, or you have taken that this will be the new normal in the credit cost?
Thank you, Rajiv. In the case of ECL coverage, there is a minute change where in the stage 3 borrowers who are paying more than 50% of the EMIs, we have taken a little lower credit cost based on our earlier experiences. So therefore, you could see about 2% variation in the total ECL coverage. However, this coverage is based on 60-day DPD, not 90-day DPD. Therefore, there is no large variation. That is one on the ECL coverage. Second, other geographies, largely
even the ECL coverage of stage 1 and stage 2 assets has come down.
Rajiv Nilesh here. So, on stage 3, as Uday said, obviously on the partial paying customers, we have taken a lower ECL in line with the approach we had taken even in the earlier times. In stage 2, you see the ECL, it has come down because in stage 2, there is a higher proportion of delinquency from Karnataka. And Karnataka historically has a higher number of low risk and medium risk districts. So that's where, as you know, that our ECL percentages vary. This is the district level risk profile. So that's where the stage 2 percentage has come down because it has a higher proportion of Karnataka.
The low risk customers and low risk geography, that is where the fall basis, because we do the district level coverage, the high risk, sorry, high delinquency come in the low risk where the actual ECL is slightly lower compared to others. That's what the change. On the other geographies, what we said is it's largely come back to normalcy. However, if you see when we give the guidance, we can see the side where the guidance is mentioned. We took 3 to 3.5% for the normal for this financial year, which actually captures us slightly elevated for this financial year. So we captured that slightly higher for this financial year. Therefore, it's already captured within the guidance what we made. I think I captured that both.
And sir, there's a mention in the slide that you are seeing improvement in center meeting attendance. So if you can just throw some light on what kind of an improvement that you are seeing in terms of maybe percentage of attendance in the meeting. And the employee engagement which we have done in Q4, if you can highlight in which functions, where are these employees added and in which geography?
Yeah, largely employees are added in particular Tamil Nadu. We had little higher attrition compared to earlier during Q3. So higher employees added in Tamil Nadu. Whereas other geographies are fairly common because we didn't have any large attrition in any other states. So therefore, it's a normal attrition. We try to put little extra employees in all the places. If you see, we have almost 8% extra we have built in actually in all places. Therefore, which will help us to monitor more and then have a higher connectivity and to have a higher follow-up sales, which will have a benefit in the coming quarters. And in case of center attendance, largely it's improved in all geography, including the geography like Bihar, UP, Jharkhand, Orissa. Also, we have seen good improvement and on the people coming back to center meetings. And the payment in center is increasing actually. So we have seen visible improvement in all geographies.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much, Indus.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. You have highlighted in your presentation about the focus on retail finance segment as well. I wanted to understand the ticket sizes in this segment have reached a certain level and they've been range bound for the past 4 quarters. What is our outlook on how the retail finance segment's ticket sizes could move? Also, during this entire last couple of months challenges, how has the retail finance books asset quality behavior been or customer behavior been? If you can highlight these two things, thank you.
Okay, sure. On retail finance side, the average ticket size for our unsecured business loan is around 1.7 lakhs, and we believe that will be range bound. And secured business loan, the average ticket size has been around 5.8 lakhs. And that will also remain in this range. 5.5 to 6 lakhs is our model and we should remain in that range. And yeah, home loans, average ticket size is around 6.8 lakhs. And that's where it will remain.
So,
less than 2%. Part 30 is around 1.5-1.9%, and with respect to secured business loans, PAR 30 is around 0.89, and home loans, it's a new book, so it's almost nil.
Correct, got it. And so this segment,
ladies and gentlemen, the line for the management seems to have been disconnected. Please stay connected while we reconnect the management back. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the line for the management reconnected. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so sorry, we got disconnected. So I'll repeat what I said. So on our unsecured business loans, the current average ticket size is around 1.7 lakhs. We believe it will be range bound around this number. And the PAR 30 in this book is now 1.97. It's moved from around 1% to 1.97, predominantly because of Karnataka effect. And in secured business loan, the average ticket size is around 5.8 lakhs. And PAR 30 is around 0.89. And in home loans, the average ticket size is around 6.8 lakhs. And since it's a new book with around 110 crores AUM, there's almost nil PAR. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, sir, you did. Just one follow-up on this. So, so you've always mentioned that retail finance is one segment. You're scaling up more in your lower risk districts, which will be more Karnataka and Tamil and Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, etc. But as of now, how much scope are you seeing for this business to be able to scale it up in any of your other geographies? Is there any comfort you're seeing in any other geographies, or should we just consider that it will continue in Karnataka and the lower?
So what we had commented upon is that we will launch these businesses in our higher penetrated geographies, because there's a certain amount of customer base. The model revolves around evolving with the customer, right? So from that perspective, the book is now in Karnataka, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu and Madhya Pradesh. During the year, we would probably look at a few more districts and states where we have higher presence. The unsecured business loan is roughly in around 730 branches out of the 2063 branches. So this is scale up slightly. With every moving year, we scale this up. All these products will move to newer states.
Got it. This is very useful. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Shweta from Elara. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity. So a couple of questions. So I was looking at Bihar geography slide, and be it GLP or borrower base, that has declined significantly in Bihar. Even the branch network has remained steady state. PAR numbers and all are function of base. But we are of the understanding that it's the over-leveraged borrower base that had caused mess in Bihar. Is there anything more to read that is bothering you, wherein you are sort of declining your further penetration into Bihar? That's question number one. Second, can you provide some color on the borrowers with over three lenders accounting for 41% of overall PAR 15, as in from the regional geographic perspective or from the segment perspective. Third observation is the marginal cost of borrowings has spiked quarter on quarter. In fact, where we started off 9.3, now it's 9.6. So how do you see this? Because you mentioned about liability mix being slightly nimble in your opening remarks. So from that perspective, how are you perceiving marginal COB? Thank you.
Shweta, thank you for your question. So marginal cost is basically what we borrowed during the quarter. So there we borrowed significantly from the international fund, so particularly IFC. Therefore, average cost of marginal cost for the quarter was little higher than compared to the earlier borrowings. But it is lesser than the average cost of borrowing. Average cost of borrowing is 9.8%. Marginal cost is the borrowing what we made in Q4 is at 9.6%. Still, it won't impact the overall cost of borrowing. There's a one large borrowing we did from international market, that's why it's slightly higher. Therefore, average was little higher. Second question is about Bihar. Yes, Bihar portfolio has come down to some extent because we took a long steps during September to March, kind of September to basically January to handle with care, to protect the portfolio, higher management there, higher overview from a risk audit and control sides. So with which, and then also the retention team. So I think those steps actually, we try to protect portfolio for quality instead of growing during that period. Therefore, there is a slight decrease in the what you call total GLP. The reduction of customer is basically because of rate off, which the accelerated rate off majority part comes from that geography. Therefore, the number of customers came down. But we already started growing. I think in the months of February, March, we started scaling up with the new controls, additional controls, with little lower ticket size, and we implemented the customer, new customer controls quite ahead of time before even everything got right. I think it is growing well now, and we are not withdrawing or reducing anything. We'll continue to grow and penetrate there, but with the higher controls and systems. So we don't see any challenges. Things are better now.
This is one point of Bihar, temporarily we also had certain people challenges. We had manpower shortage. That has also been corrected now.
Yeah.
And that is why you will see the reversal in Bihar is quite strong.
Reversing trend of delinquency is quite strong, quite fast. So we are quite fine there now. And the other one is of the borrower with more than three lenders in the under PAR 15, right? So it was 41% of PAR 15. This is a very insignificant number. It's not very high actually. But it's coming down slowly. But we see that there is sensor we already provided that. Which state which is high, I don't know. Maybe largely in the northern belt. You have any data in that?
Yeah, so Shweta, largely it will like what we have shared earlier. We have a higher proportion of unique borrowers in our core markets, and obviously in the newer markets wherein we have entered over last 2 to 3 years, there is a proportion of borrowers having two or three or four lenders. That proportion is obviously relatively higher there compared to our core markets. So since you are referring to Bihar, yes, in Bihar, larger number of customers will fall within the 0 to 4 year vintage. And that is where those borrowers, in case they are having more than three lenders, where the PAR contribution will be more. So overall PAR in Bihar, if you see it is 12%, then obviously at a company level, if the more than three lenders is accounting for say 40%, then in Bihar it will be slightly higher. But overall, it's more of a broad-based. Depending upon the vintage and the overlap, what we have across different states.
Got it. Very
helpful. So, to be clear, Shweta, this set of customers is about 2.5% of the overall customers of the company. So, it's not so
The purpose of that data point, Shweta, was to highlight that not the entire issue is not because of over-leveraging. So the point was that 40% of the power is because of over-leveraging, but the balance 60% power is because of the business as usual factors in addition to various other factors what we witnessed over last 12 months in form of income variations or heat waves, migrations, ringleader issues, etc. So various factors have been playing out in addition to over-leverage. That's the point we wanted.
Thank you. Thank you for elaboration and best of luck.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So first thing, just trying to understand, in our FY26 guidance, we spoke about this 8 to 12% kind of a growth in the group lending business, the JLG business. And you also highlighted this is because of some accelerated write-offs which are expected in 1H. Just trying to understand why this year the growth is low. What rate can we start seeing the group lending business growing maybe from FY27 onwards? So asking this because, I mean, we understand what the industry has gone through. And to that extent now, I mean, after some of this stress from over-leveraging is behind, then at what rate can the industry be growing and within that, what could our growth look like in the group lending business?
Abhijit, hi, Nilesh here. So, see, the guidance what we have given for next year in group lending, which is 8 to 12%. So, obviously, it will be some extent there will be an impact of write-offs what we will be taking. And if you see, when we had given a guidance in month of January, at that time we were anticipating that we'll be doing the cleanup by, say, end of June. However, because of the Karnataka issue, maybe it will get extended by another quarter and it will go to September. So predominantly whatever write-off which will happen in next financial year, will the larger portion of that will happen in first half. That is where you will see the overall growth will be little flattish in the first half, X of write-off, and obviously we will cover it up in the second half wherein the write-offs will be more of normative in nature. From the growth perspective, obviously the customer additions, renewals, everything will happen. But yes, because of the write-off, you will see a flattish growth in group lending business in the first half, and it will catch up in the third and fourth quarter.
Got it.
So largely on a steady state basis, Abhijit, as we had said earlier, microfinance 14 to 15% growth on a steady state basis is what we will always look for. And including retail finance, it will go to 18-20%. Next year, that 14-15 is a little lesser because as we come out of the current crisis and obviously the impact of crisis.
Got it. This is useful. And then the second question that I had was, I joined a little late. Have we already covered what we are seeing in Tamil Nadu after the introduction of the bill? Now why I ask this is very often we try to understand that, I mean, what we saw in Karnataka, we saw some bit of it brewing, right, in media, whether we talk about some news flow around suicides in Karnataka and then the Karnataka ordinance. But I think, I mean, from what I gathered by speaking to a few other MFIs is also the fact that no one saw this Tamil Nadu bill coming, while everyone acknowledges it is not really applicable to regulated entities or MFIs for that matter. So the related question is, A, what is happening in Tamil Nadu today? What is it that you are seeing? And the other thing is, are there any other states except, let's say, Karnataka or Tamil Nadu, where there are some problems today and going forward, there could be some such ordinances or bills which could get passed?
In Tamil Nadu today, ground level, there is absolutely no change or no impact as on date, right? However, we would be mindful, probably we would be proactive to engage with customers better. But at ground, there is absolutely no impact at this point in time. And with respect to if it's going to come in any other state, I think we'll have to kind of, from our perspective, we don't see anything as a signal or sign anywhere at this point of time. But we'll have to wait and watch.
The noise is there. I mean, there's more noise, but you're not seeing any impact on your collection efficiencies or power accretion just yet.
Absolutely nothing. We've not heard this from anybody else also. Not necessarily just us.
Got it, sir. And then, sir, the last question I had is, obviously, we can't control what happens in specific states, right? But, I mean, this whole mini credit cycle was to say that we went through this year, whether we call it because of over-leveraging, heat waves, right? Maybe Tamil Nadu, some unseasonal flooding, cyclones. Is at least that part, excluding what is happening in specific states, at least that stress, is it now at least at the fag end, or is it now behind us as we move into the next year?
See, that's how it looks like for us, and hence we are saying that probably we would have a good second half, right? And we've also had good monsoons. There is no other signs at this point of time which is kind of worrying us or which is going to stress us apart from coming out of Karnataka at this point of time.
Got it, sir. This is useful. That's all from my side, and I wish you and your team the very best.
Thank you, obviously.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. First question is on, sir, on the credit cost. What I gather is that on a steady state basis also, we are seeing that the credit cost of the business will be higher than what we were anticipating before this crisis. So how are we planning in terms of yields, margins, to negate the impact of higher credit costs in future, let's say in FY27 and beyond?
I think, you know, what we envisaged earlier also, in May 24, that there could be higher elevated. But for the next factor, we assume that it will be about 3 to 3.5% for the financial year, which is a normal credit cost for the year. That's what we are expecting. We need to review later after the year end, maybe 3-4 quarters down, we'll review for the future years. And our district-based pricing and district-based, what you call the ECL modeling, will help us to have a reasonable, moderation of yields, will not have too much negative impact to us. Because if the credit card goes up in a district, our price also will go up to some extent. So therefore, it will not impact on the yield. That is why our guidance, NIM and yield are not actually different. It remains same. Impact is only to the extent of the what called reversal because of the request. Otherwise, it remains same. So therefore, we are not seeing too much impact of the pricing or our credit cost will impact on our yields.
So I'm asking that in case the credit cost remains elevated at 3%, 3.5%, whether there will be a yield increase on the new loans that you will be discussing, because the risk has increased.
Right. Already provided. It will not be on the every loan. You know, in that the based on the risk, higher risk, we would actually increase the price. Or if there's a lower risk statistic, we may reduce the price also, right?
Also the pricing model has a slightly longer tenor. So it has to run through the tenor to show the impact in pricing. So we may not react immediately, but we'll have to see the time period in our pricing policy, how the pricing moves, and if there is anything that will be slowly passed.
Correct. Also, there is another impact in terms of the cost of borrowing impact. That's also a declining trend. Is that I think reasonably we'll be able to manage a decent, stable NIM and yields.
Sure. And secondly, can you share the retail finance breakup in terms of secured and unsecured?
So the unsecured AUM is 1,100 crores. And the secured business lending is 250. So the overall mortgage book is 350. Secured business lending is around 240 crores. And home loans is around 110 crores.
Sure.
Total 1,543 crores in this.
Sure, sure. And the last question is that, so we have shared a lot of data on customer leverage, etc. But if we include other retail loans for our customer base, what percentage of our customers will have other retail loans? Other than microfinance and unsecured loans.
So the overall, if I remember right, the overall retail bureau imprint is around 40% plus. But majority of that has consistently remained for years in gold loan. The rest of them are single digit numbers mostly.
Okay, sure. Sure. Thank you. That's it from my side. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Chinmay Nema from Prescient Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Hope I'm audible.
Yeah.
Sir, firstly, a slightly longer term question. Given that the stress now seems to be subsiding, how do you see or when do you see the PAR numbers basically reversing back to the you know, normal levels, as in the Q1 levels or what they were back in Q4 last year?
See, I think whatever the PAR is created, it has to take its journey. So that's why we said we will have probably a normative period in H2. So H1 will remain elevated. H2 should start coming back to normalcy.
Got it. And secondly, if wanted to confirm, if I understood correctly, basically the provisioning has come down during the quarter, basically because you're expecting better recoveries in Karnataka. Is that understanding correct?
No, no. Two aspects in this. One, because the PAR in Karnataka has gone up. Karnataka traditionally had a lot of lower risk districts. So hence the weightage has fallen, right? So there is a reduction there. And second, in stage 3, like Uday said, if customers are paying more than 50%, we have assumed a slightly lower credit cost because this is current repayment coming into the system.
And also the new PAR accretion has come down compared to Q3. So that also impact which reduced the overall new provision.
Understood, sir. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirius. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My question was on, firstly, by when do we see this more than 3 lender and more than 2 lakh ticket size customers, which currently stands at closer to 20.1% and 9.5%, dropping to our expected level? That's the first question, sir. Or our targeted level, rather.
So, you know, it's difficult to have a targeted level here because you have short-term loan. If you see in 7 months, there is almost 10% reduction. So it will actually go on as the MFIN guardrails will continue to be there. So it will automatically will come down on a normal pace as they come back to regularize the loan with the payback and close their loan, automatically comes down. So overall, it's already coming down. The journey has begun going on well. Maybe 2-3 quarters, it will come down to an accepted level, not only for us, but our industry also. It's just the industry targeted measures to deleverage the customers. No? I think it's already working well and it continues to work well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So second question was, like, we've given a guidance of 5.5 to 6% credit cost for 26, but I mean, that doesn't have any buffer for any uncertainties that might come up in the state of Tamil Nadu from, you know, the ordinance that has come up. So just do you think there could be variation if something of that nature comes up? And if you think so, then should we not already provide that buffer in the guidance?
See, the ordinance, the talk about the ordinance has been there for the last 1 month almost. We are not seeing any impact in the ground either to us or anybody else. So therefore, we are not anticipating anything coming drastically from Tamil Nadu. So there is always a comparison of Karnataka to Tamil Nadu. Maybe I will take 1 minute to explain why this difference. In Karnataka, what happened, there was a heightened media, police, political influence and everything before the ordinance, and that led to ordinance. There was a hostile situation for a month, actually. By that time, the delinquency was elevated, and the ordinance came later, then with the clarity. So then, slowly it came down. Whereas in Tamil Nadu, there is no such situation at all. It is government on its own, maybe followed the Karnataka model and tried to implement by excluding upfront the REs and the banks. So, therefore, we are not seeing any such heightened delinquency trend coming up there. So, therefore, we are not believing that at this point of time, after witnessing almost 20 days of journey, we are not seeing any such events happening there. So, of course, for a small variation here and there, it is we will be able to manage, because that is why we said the current regular credit cost may be slightly higher, which is 3 to 3.5, which should cover this kind of very small event. If a larger event, definitely the thing will change. So this is subject to reasonable stable period.
Mm-hmm. Got it, sir. Got it. And this is just one last question. It's more structural in nature. So what are the changes that you see? Every credit cycle so far has taught us something at industry level and also at organization level, right? So this time around, what are the changes that you see are emerging, maybe on, let's say, credit underwriting side, even on tenure structuring side, or even on the collection frequency side? So, I mean, such as, say, maybe having credit manager at branch level, do you see such changes or such operational changes being brought in by players in the industry?
Yeah, I think broadly, every such cycle takes you back to basics, right? So, I think the fundamentals of microfinance is still intact, and we need to work on strengthening process. There was a gap in regulation for different kind of players that has also been kind of removed now. And the industry is working together in this challenge. So that's a very big positive thing in my view. And whatever steps we've taken, we are seeing it play out. And we are also seeing that people are mindful of expansion, people are mindful of underwriting, people are taking significant steps towards better income assessment. So I think the fundamentals of lending will have to play in a significant part in also in microfinance as we move forward. And with strong bureau data over the period of years, and like I said, since the industry is now working together under SROs, we can navigate this better and probably have better environment as we move forward. That's what comes to my mind. Uda, if you want to add.
I think, you know, it's a joint effort by the industry, by regulator, and by the SROs, actually. I think all of them are working closely to see how to navigate going forward. The guardrails are one of the outcome. When I say guardrail, it's guardrails made by the industry itself. You know, when you say everything, this industry made the guardrails. That means the members are part of making the guardrail for themselves, right? So I think there's that kind of consciousness already there. Not only the guardrails, and again, underwriting systems, many of them are probably improving the underwriting even our case also. For example, We expanded our audit team to audit the branch at a frequency of even less than 45 days today. So which is very hard. So we have taken that kind of journey. And then to make it more strong, we implemented the business rule engine to accommodate the stronger control, stringent inflow of customers checks. So many measures are adopted. I think similarly, many MFIs definitely would have made that, you know. I think it's a joint effort of all stakeholders together, and it is happening. I think these learnings are definitely will be helpful for the future.
Got it, sir. So thank you so much for answering my questions. I'll come in the queue if I have more questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Viral Shah from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thank you. Sir, two questions. One is I look at slide number 13 and I look at the state-wise PAR. So when I look at Tamil Nadu, over there I see that for PAR 0, it has declined by around 80 basis points quarter on quarter. whereas the PAR 90 has actually gone up by 130 basis points. And if I say just do a flow analysis of the flow through rates, it seems that the flow through rate seems to be much higher in Tamil Nadu, say compared to even something like a Bihar. Is there anything to read over here, or what is it?
Difficult to read, because Tamil Nadu, the higher delinquency happened in January, which moved into the bucket. So whereas December actually, that moved in, whereas others from November, the trend reversal started early, little 1 month early. Maybe that March is in between. Probably that made little difference. Otherwise, by and large, the trend is that is common across the geography. Because Tamil Nadu, we faced little bad situation because of rains and everything in December, right? That all moved into PAR 90 in March 31st. There are some competition issues also there along with that, which all corrected. Maybe it's an accounting issue, right? We are not seeing any very different issue in Tamil Nadu.
Okay, sir. So my second question is, see, when we talk of, say, near to normalized PAR accretion, see, even X of Karnataka, if you look at, say, in the month of April, it is still more than double of what it was last year. So, like, is it something that we should be calling or talking of, say, close to normalization? Because this is going to be a longer journey, right?
Yeah, I think we said the near normal is correct, because April was a little aberration in the first half of the month due to a lot of holidays, lot of festivals, lot of employee holidays during that period. So little aberration, but it's already coming back to normalcy in the May itself already. So it is just a temporary blip of first 15 days of April. Otherwise, we are already back into normal.
Sir, but if I recall, like last year, in the first quarter when the trends had started deteriorating, the explanation was, even from an industry perspective, that there were heat waves and elections. So I would think that even in the base, it would have already been there.
No, I think, you know, let's compare to March to March now. April, we know that there's a small blip. It's a temporary. We are aware why it happened, because of holidays and festivals and a couple of, you know, when there is a lot of employee holidays also there, employee transfers also there. But we are aware about it. But by May 10th, we may be, May 14th, we are already back. If you look at May month, May 1 to May 14th, we are at 0.12% new accretion, actually. So it's already come back to normalcy. So it's a question of small blip in the April first half. Otherwise, we are definitely near normal compared to March last year or April last year.
Got it, sir. And sir, last question, more I would say a bit philosophical. In this cycle, what is different versus in the previous cycle, how we look at and analyze this? See, historically, we always used to look at, say, PAR. Right, when is the PAR peaking out, how it is trending. Now, in this entire cycle, the conversations, sir, have moved to, say, incremental pace of PAR accretion. Right, at the end of the day, the PAR is still keeping on increase. Are we, I would say, trying to, say, crystal gaze too much in future, say, if trends persist like this 12 months down the line, this is what it could look like. Because when we look at X bucket collection efficiency, by definition, sir, after 9 months of pain, it has to improve, right? Because we are eliminating the delinquent customers from the base.
Correct. So, expected collections need to come below, need to be above 99.5% to reach the near normalcy. That is what we are telling. Largely, many states other than Karnataka, we are more than 99.5 to 99.7% expected collections. So, why one using X bucket as a benchmark today? Because the current PAR in the system is much higher. If you put the PAR as a control, it's difficult to assess the actual efficiency, because every PAR of even 0.1% actually increase the total PAR. So therefore, the X bucket become relevant today. Maybe once this entire journey of provision and rate off is completed, we will be back to a collection efficiency as a norm. So this is a currently probably X bucket collection is the more relevant. When this whole journey completes, entire things are written off, then you have normal, and then you look at better ways the collection efficiency or a par zero kind of thing.
Yeah, and a new car acquisition rate is important for you to get a view of how things are moving.
Trending, yeah.
No, fair enough, sir. I get it. But if we, in the denominator, in an X bucket collection efficiency scenario, keep on removing the delinquent customers, like after 9 months, say, like say 10%, 15% or 20% of the delinquent customers, as they keep getting removed from the denominator, the X bucket number will keep improving, right? Because the book has not grown much in this period, right?
Yeah, in this period is not prudent to grow the book also, right? We need to be
careful. So my question, sir, was more, I would say, I understand from as a manager how you want to look at it, and probably this is the right metric. But more so from, say, analyzing it, are we kind of trying to jump the gun?
From analysis point of view, you have all data. You have a collection efficiency, you have par 0, par 60, par 90 plus. You have X bucket, you have all the parameters available to analyze, right?
Right. Fair enough, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ashlesh Sonje from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead. Ashlesh, your line is unmuted. Please proceed with your question.
I think can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Please.
Okay. Hi, sir. Good evening. Few questions from my side. Firstly, can you share the X bucket collection efficiency number for the months of April and May thus far? I believe you had disclosed a number of about 99.3, 99.4 overall for for the month of March. So that is one. Secondly, in your understanding, why are you not so worried about incremental drop-off after the implementation of the three-lender cap in April? Because even now, about 9% of your loan book is exposed to that set of borrowers. That's the second one. And lastly, more qualitative, when we speak to industry participants, we understand that there is a general challenge of uniquely identifying borrowers, because different lenders tend to use different KYC documents. Additionally, it also seems like the credit bureau is not allowed to store or share the Aadhaar number of the borrower. So where are you and where is the industry in general today on solving that issue? Thanks. Those are all the questions.
Yeah, I think, you know, expected collections are zero, we said, 9.6 or
anything. No, on the overall book, it is around, say, 99.2. Because of Karnataka.
If you exclude Karnataka,
it's around, say, 99.5.
In the month of April, May till...
May it will be better because, as you see, Ashlesh, as on 11th of May, we have added around, say, 12 pips of par zero. So, if we continue the same trend, maybe for the full month, we add around, say, 25 to 30 pips of par zero, which means that the collection X bucket will be around 99.7.
That is including Karnataka.
Yeah, including Karnataka. So, we need to see.
Correct. That is one. Second is about the dropout and the incremental growth, right? So we know that there will be about 6-7% of customers we have to drop, and the portfolio also to some extent we have to drop almost 5% of the income. But still we have an opportunity. If you look at the slide, we talked about guidance, we mentioned what are the challenges and what are the opportunities that we have. We feel we'll be able to acquire customers. If you look at in the Q4, we acquired 2.61 lakh new customers with the 43% new to credit.
Sorry to interrupt you. Hello. So this question was more around worrying about delinquencies because you won't be able to lend to some of these borrowers.
Ashlesh, regarding your question on delinquency, see, largely as we have
no, his question is that number of lenders where borrowers where we are more lenders.
Huh.
That pool is still there around.
Yeah, it will be that we are paying. No, 80% of them are paying.
Yeah.
So but
so Ashlesh, as you see the slide on delinquencies, wherein ex Karnataka we see that even in case of borrowers with more than four lenders, the PAR has largely been stable. So this is something we have been saying earlier also, that the delinquencies have largely played out and not the entire pool having multiple lenders is bad. So there we still have 80% customers who continue to make payments, and over a period of time, normatively, the customers who keep making payments, obviously at some point in time, their one or the other loan gets closed, their overall outstanding falls below 2 lakh and they again become eligible. So this is not going to be a permanent loss for us. It is only a temporary adjustment wherein we borrowers will have to wait for some time, get their obligations under control and they again become eligible. Obviously, during this time, customers who might get into delinquency, they are getting into the delinquent bucket. So that is something we have seen over last 6 months.
Yeah, also,
some of it will happen.
Also, we need to recognize that these are all short-term loans. That's why it's actually coming down faster. Maybe this month they may not be eligible, 3 months down they may be eligible because they would have paid as the three installments to all of them in the borrowed. I think that's why I said 81% of those customers are all paying and good standard even today. So I think most of them will remain, and by the time they come back for renewal, probably they will be back with eligibility. So therefore, we believe that this is not a big risk for us.
Understood, sir. The question comes because in the last few months, we have seen many lenders starting to disburse as well at a fairly robust momentum. The fear is that, how are we sure that the repayments which are coming through are purely because of recovery in incomes and not purely because of the access to disbursements?
So, I see, so long they are paying to all the lenders and when they come back for the renewal, if they are not what you call default with any other lenders and they are within the three lenders norm or within 2 lakh, we don't see a risk in renewing, right? That is point one. Second, find maybe some other lender they borrow from somebody else and pay to us. But they are paying to be only one installment, not the entire loan. Correct. And they would have borrowed with no delinquency with anybody and they are eligible to get the money. I don't think there's an issue there also.
Understood, sir. Okay. And sir, the last one on borrower identification.
KYC, we have to go by only voter ID at this point of time because of the regulatory requirement. But we actually implemented the entire portal checking long back. So every ID is a YouTube and the portal leg checking is done. So to a large extent, it is...
Only one impact what we have been observed earlier is the bureau... Sorry, I think we lost.
No, sir, I can hear you. I can hear you.
KYC challenge.
I'm the KYC challenge. Identification of the
report. Just give me one moment. Ladies and gentlemen, the line for the management seems to have been disconnected. Please stay connected while we reconnect the management back. Ladies and gentlemen, the line for the management has been reconnected. Please go ahead, sir.
Ajay, sorry, we had some technical problem. So, I was talking about the bureau data, right? So, voter ID is being validated through a voter ID portal before acquiring any customer or before giving any loan. And largely, this is stable across industry today. And one of the problems which we had, most of the banks used to give data once in a month. By regulation, it becomes fortnight. You know, that also is a higher frequency, which helps the identification faster, if any multiple lending can be checked faster. And even the entire regulator, particularly MFIN, is tracking all the MFIN members about the KYC side, as well as the multiple lender side, as well as the leveraging side also. And then they give back the data if anyone breaches also. So largely it's a good governance there. So therefore there may not be too much of risk coming. Of course, if Aadhaar would have been there, it was very good for everybody. Unfortunately, that is not the case today. So we have to manage this voter ID.
Perfect, sir. Thank you. Yes, yes.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Hardik Shah from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, Hardik. Yeah, Hardik.
Okay. Sir, I have two questions. One is on the growth. Appreciate you calling out group lending growth at 8 to 12% because of potential write-offs. But if you were to think about FY27 in a normalized environment, how should we think about growth? If you could break that down into borrower growth and ticket size growth. Why I ask that particularly is because penetration levels in some of the large states have already reached at very high levels. Bihar, more than 90%, Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, 65%. So what are the states that will drive that borrower growth, if you could allude on that?
I think, you know, our microfinance growth would remain range-bound between 8 to 20% even for FY27, 28 also, because we already said that our microfinance growth will remain lower, whereas non-microfinance growth will be a little higher to compensate that. So therefore, we believe that between 14-15% or 12-14% is feasible in microfinance by through new customers as well as retained customer renewals, which is still possible. So we don't see a risk there. And the geography-wise, I think, you know, there are still many large geographies unmet. If you look at the entire India, even the 80% of the MFI covered districts, high districts, still you have more than 30%, 30-40% of unmet demand there. So which we can continue to address that in the deep rural. So if you look at our business is deep rural, and it is still there is a high opportunity there. As you see right now, our new to credit is almost 43%, which is basically a new customer, right? So that means there is a huge opportunity still.
Got it, sir. In terms of borrower and ticket size, fair to assume 8 and 4 if you are calling 12% as the group lending? Or is this more going to be only borrower and ticket size kind of remains flat because we've already seen over level?
Because we always work on retaining customers and growing, evolving with them. That means the retained customer will get a higher ticket size. Therefore, there will be two sets of growth. One is growth from the new customer, that the ticket size will be lower for the current year, but by 27, they will get the more. Correct? So, it's always a continuous journey. So, the growth will come from some percentage come from the ticket size or on a renewal, higher renewal, and some set of growth will come from the, what you call, the new customers. So, 7-8% may be our customer growth. Is it that? About 10-15% will be the portfolio growth kind of thing.
Understood. Very clear, sir. So, second question is...
I'm talking about microfinance only. But that is retail.
Yes, 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 of course. Yeah, am I audible, sir? Yeah, my second question is on the proposed bill by the central government on banning of unauthorized lending act, Pan India, which kind of looks like the reading looks like similar to Karnataka ordinance. So any early view on that, if at all that was to be implemented, how could you navigate that?
We don't have much idea, but actually when Karnataka government was doing this regulation, actually did go through the draft guidelines of OLA actually. I think largely aligned with that. So we have to see, we can see about it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bhavesh Ganani from Swan Investments. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. Just a quick one. Some color on the individual loan composition we are looking at over the next couple of years, and the yield differential between the group loan and individual.
So broadly, we have guided that incrementally the growth in microfinance will slow down and the retail will catch up. And we've guided earlier that roughly around 2028, we will have anywhere between 12 to 15% of non-microfinance loans. And yield, as we said earlier also, most of the retail finance loans are either equal or slightly lower than microfinance loans, except for home loans, which is today averaging at around 16.9%. So we will take some partnership route for home loans once we have some traction in book size and experience, thereby neutralizing any impact on yields.
Okay. But would you like to call out within this 12 to 15% individual loans, what kind of mix will be contributed by home loans?
So, Bhavesh, overall, the retail finance, what we are looking at, maybe it might reach 15% of this. So, as of now, in this, the secured versus unsecured is around, unsecured is 75%, secured is 25%. So, maybe over next couple of years, we aim to take it to around, say, 50-50%. So, in secured book, largely it will be the secured business loans, affordable housing loans, and two-wheeler loans. And unsecured will be the individual business. So maybe it might settle somewhere around 50-50 over next 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So in essence, NIM implications, you don't see any major NIM implication because of the mix change?
No.
We don't see any major implication on NIM, whereas you will have an advantage of a cost implication, a better cost implication, because this is, there's no or a minimal acquisition cost. Because
as you are
going to do majority of the business
with
the existing customer. So,
with
advantage on our account.
Bhavesh, we'll try to be neutral at the PBT level. So, since on the retail finance, individual business loans, it is all given to our existing customers. And even in the secured book, which is the secured business loans and affordable housing loans, we still have around 60% existing and 40% new. So, across larger portion of the retail finance, we will not have any sourcing cost. So to that extent, our cost structures will be under control and we will try to optimize our pricing to be competitive in the industry, at the same time ensure consistency on the PBT front. So that's what we'll try to maintain the ROAs across all the products.
Got it. Thanks for the response.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we would take that as the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, everybody, for patiently listening, and then thank you for questions also. Forward for continuous support. Thank you very much. Good evening.
On behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your line.